Federal and local authorities are investigating the spread of far-right extremism in law enforcement and the military. The pro-Trump riot and storming of the Capitol on January 6th didn't just include white power and anti-government groups like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. There were also off-duty law enforcement officers and current and former members of the military. Over a dozen members of law enforcement are currently under investigation for their alleged involvement in the Capitol riot. Another dozen Capitol police are under investigation for allegedly encouraging the rioters. Our next guest, an expert in extremist ideologies and homeland security, says extremism is a long simmering problem in the U.S. military and that the Capitol insurrection was a boiling point. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about extremism in the military and or law enforcement? What do you think should be done to tackle the problem? Are you a member of law enforcement or the military yourself? What's your reaction to what we're seeing in the news? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Heather Williams is a senior policy researcher at RAND Corporation and a professor at the Pardee RAND Graduate School. She previously served as deputy national intelligence officer for Iran at the National Intelligence Council. Her work focuses on ideological extremism. Heather, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we go into law enforcement and the military, can you talk about the far-right extremist threat in the United States? Have we been taking it seriously enough in recent years?
Well, that's a great question, Rob. And we've actually seen the FBI in the last few years emphasize that there needs to be more attention put on far-right extremism. Over the last 5 years, we've seen far-right extremists be responsible for more fatalities in the United States than any other type of extremism. So surpassed, for example, that connected to Islamic extremism. And the last 2 years or so, there has been a greater emphasis inside the FBI and parts of the intelligence community to look at this problem.
Let's look now at law enforcement. First of all, as I mentioned, more than a dozen off-duty law enforcement officers allegedly part of the events at the Capitol on January 6th. What do we know about extremism and law enforcement?
So in terms of the law enforcement connectivity to that event, there's been kind of 39 names at this point that I've seen circulated suggesting that those are active duty law enforcement officers who may have been present at the rally. That does not mean that all of those individuals entered the Capitol. There are four individuals who have been charged with actually violating the law and entering the Capitol. So there's one more officer who there maybe is evidence that they were also in the Capitol. But we are still talking about a relatively small number of individuals who have been confirmed to have participated in the entrance of the Capitol, and then it's unclear exactly what they did when they did so.
And then in the military, we have the Secretary of Defense now, General Lloyd Austin, saying, hey, entire Department of Defense, we're going to review the problem of extremism in our ranks. Small, the Secretary of Defense says, but not small enough. What do we know about extremism and far-right extremism in the military?
Well, we don't know enough, and this is true for law enforcement as well. I mean, one of the biggest questions here is that we don't know how prevalent these problems are in police departments and in the military services. There haven't been a lot of research efforts to kind of look at the prevalence, and there's more transparency, I would say, probably on the part of the military than there are the part of police departments. But there isn't a lot of information to understand how common this problem is and how often it leads to the removal of individuals.
Talking to Heather Williams from the RAND Corporation, she focuses on ideological extremism in her work. We're talking about the potential for far-right extremism in the U.S. military and law enforcement. Heather, when it comes to trying to prevent people who are involved in actual extremist groups from being involved in these organizations, I mean, a law enforcement officer off duty can go and participate in politics. They could participate in a protest legally, I think, and without jeopardizing their duties at all. Where is the line drawn?
Yes, so there's some precedent that as public servants, there are kind of tighter boundaries for what's appropriate behavior for a law enforcement officer than there might just be for an ordinary civilian. So even though the activity may not be illegal, and an officer may not be breaking the law by engaging in these activities, it may still be appropriate to question their continued employment in that kind of a position of trust and of public service.
Can you talk some about the history of extremism within law enforcement and the military? This isn't an entirely new issue, right?
Certainly not. And I think particularly when we talk about the U.S. criminal justice system and police, there is an institutional history of racism. There were racist purposes in which police initially served to enforce laws related to slavery and then Jim Crow laws. So, you know, it would be great if there was a clear line between what was unconscious bias of police officers, what was racist activity, racist sentiment among police officers, and then what constituted explicit extremism, but there's not. So, you know, the fact that we've had a problem with racism probably also means that there is a sliver of this problem that has slipped into more what we might consider extremist activity and even violent extremism.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in Columbus. Bob, hi.
Hi. I have a disagreement with the perspective that you're bringing. First off, as a member of the armed services for close to 20 years, you know, you take an oath, and the whole idea of oath keepers is to you take an oath and you're expected to live up to the terms of that oath for your life. That's not extremist. I took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And during the Trump administration, I was on high alert for what I would have considered an unlawful order. And, now I'm on high alert for what I am concerned to be unlawful orders from the Biden administration, because they're both using executive powers outside the Constitution. That's not extremist. And you know, our legislators should be expected to uphold that same oath. They're supposed to be upholding the Constitution, not circumventing it with bypassing election laws or actually advocating for policies that are clearly unconstitutional.
Bob, thanks for the call. So Bob referring to the group Oath Keepers, that is how they bill themselves as living up to the oaths they take in the military. Can you talk about the Oath Keepers a little bit?
So the Oath Keepers is an interesting movement, and I think it's important to keep in mind that not everybody who may have at some point kind of signed on to the Oath Keepers has the same perspective as to what it is. The Oath Keepers attempt to recruit individuals with a pitch that I think many of us are sympathetic to, with the idea that, you know, you serve this higher concept of the U.S. Constitution, of our democratic processes, and that you would kind of be available, you'd be willing to stand by to defend those things if they were in a time of crisis. They elicit a membership fee, and they collect some personal information about people who they can pitch that effectively to. And it is a pitch that often does resonate with armed forces members or with police, because it sounds at face value consistent with the oaths that they make when they enter into their jobs. However, the actual leaders of the Oath Keepers and some individuals who are more, let's say, hardcore members of the Oath Keepers have more aggressive and nefarious intent that would actually involve sometimes using force to circumvent or intervene or otherwise stand in the way of democratic processes in the United States.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Heather Williams, senior policy researcher at RAND Corporation. She's with us to talk about extremism in law enforcement and the military. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this a problem that concerns you? If you've been a member of law enforcement or the military, have you seen efforts to recruit people to extremist organizations, maybe among your ranks? Call in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with extremism expert Heather Williams. She's explaining why right-wing extremism is a concern in the U.S. military and law enforcement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Heather, before we go back to our callers, I know I've talked to people about groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, and one challenge is, yes, there are people who are identified members of those groups, but then there might be people who meet them online, sympathize with them online, follow them online, maybe have limited or no direct contact with them, but are inspired to acts of violence by that experience. Do we see similar things with far-right extremism in the United States?
Yes, I think there is similarly sort of a spectrum of activity that individuals engage in. Some of it just expressing support, and promoting these ideas, and maybe sometimes even going on to produce propaganda. And a very small number of individuals are actively involved in acts of violence.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hey, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I was wondering, since we've been in combat for so long, 16, 17 years now, and we're giving veterans, you know, I think a duly well-deserved heads up and leg up when it comes to joining police departments. Are we now putting so many combat veterans into the police departments that they're treating almost any situation as combat? And a lot of these people who are joining militias and whatnot are also people who are used to dealing with problems in a very physical, combative way.
Tom, thanks for the call. Is there something, I guess, in a militarized mindset, I think Tom is asking, that might lead people to see extremism and extremist violence as a solution to a political problem?
I mean, I hope not. I do think that there's a different problem there, which is, are police officers responding to situations in a way that may escalate or may be too militant an approach? I don't think that that is the same as the concerns we would have about extremism, which still represents a very small number of both soldiers and officers by and large. Now, those small numbers kind of taint the whole quite often and do a lot to undermine public trust in any police officers, and that's problematic. But I think that the issue of ensuring that we have adequately addressed the trauma that comes from combat and just how police are trained and primed to go into situations is a different problem, and there are different things that could be done to address it.
Thanks for the call. Dale joins us next in Merrill. Dale, hello.
Yep. You there?
Yep. Go ahead, Dale. I hear you.
So I'm a law enforcement officer, been in law enforcement since the 1980s. And when I was first hired, the Posse Comitatus, which was a version of sovereign citizens, were active in Wisconsin. And literally part of my screening process was asking me questions about extremist views, anti-government views. So this is not a problem that's new. And as a law enforcement officer and a supervisor, the key to eliminating extremist people from within law enforcement is right at that line supervision level. The sergeants and lieutenants that work with the officers in the field should be able to identify people who are problematic, whether it's extremism or abusing policy or being physically abusive. And I mean, that's the key to ferreting out these problems within law enforcement. And I'm assuming the same for the military.
Dale, thanks a lot for that call. And Dale points us in a great direction. Heather, what can, say, a police department do, as Dale was saying, to screen people for these risks at the outset?
Yes, I think that's a great point, both in terms of the fact that police departments do have it within their capability to try to identify individuals that could present a risk, and then with good leadership can respond to those problems as they manifest. I think the problem is that we have close to 18,000 police departments in this country, and they do things differently. And some do these better than others. Some are more desperate for officers and may be willing to settle for a candidate who really doesn't meet the standards that we should expect from police officers. And as I mentioned, I don't think that this problem is something endemic to law enforcement. But even in a very small numbers, a few bad apples can kind of be caustic in how people see the whole system and the trust that someone has when they are approached by police or when they need to engage police for help.
Thanks a lot for that call. I appreciate it at 800-642-1234. So say a department hasn't had this kind of screening in place for years and is looking at this to say, okay, we don't think this is a big problem. We want to make sure it's a non-problem in our agency. How do they start to play catch up if this isn't something they've been tracking for years?
So I think that there are some basic questions you could just ask that to help understand someone's personality and their outlook and how they treat others and whether they hold discriminatory or hateful views against a group of people, be it based on race or be it based on gender. That is one mechanism. Understanding what a law enforcement officer's history is important to know. There is often not a there's not a national database, for example, that helps us understand when officers have been fired for misconduct. And some departments may not be as thorough as they should be in understanding why an officer has moved from a department to another. So to understand that there wasn't a concern about this officer that prompted them to be previously dismissed or fired is another option.
Just briefly, in our last few moments, do we need more data and analysis and collection of data on these issues?
Well, I'm a researcher, so my answer is always yes. We certainly need more data. And I think what we're seeing with the military in the stand down is a huge acknowledgement of that. I mean, Secretary Austin's stand down, I think, one, reflects the seriousness to which he sees this problem, but also reflects the fact that the military doesn't necessarily know what to do next. You know, I spoke to what the responsibilities might be of a police officer, but for military members, for uniformed service members in all services, they are prohibited from actively being involved in any kind of extremist activity. So the rule is on the books, but we don't have a good understanding of how those sorts of rules get enforced and what's the accountability for when they are broken. And that holds for police as well.
Heather, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Heather Williams is senior policy researcher at RAND Corporation. She's previously deputy national intelligence officer for Iran at the National Intelligence Council. She joined us for a look at far-right extremism in the U.S. military and law enforcement.